is Cascadia Public Radio.
Making TV special.
Venice. Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means? It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
Historic moment. We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order.
You want us to stand down. You want us to back off. You got the nerve to call us conspiracy theorists just because we're informed.
I'm trying to mobilize the leaders to take action against the new world order and to resist them.
Watch this DVD and listen to the eyewitness testimony about explosions going off before the first plane even hit.
We're one of 300 families that came up here to get away from the collapse of the American civilization.
You guys heard of the Philadelphia experiment? It's kind of interesting.
I chased Bilderberg
heads of state from Europe, officials of our government, holding a secret meeting.
We've got a camera right here, so we've got this area covered and this area covered. So we got them. Do the same.
Some would call this an obsession. I don't have much of an interest in anything else, really.
I have this inner urge. I just have to expose the New World Order to people.
I live in a very stressful world, and it's showing on me. It's showing on my health.
I am afraid of being targeted because of these things.
We have the jury box, we have the ballot box, we have the cartridge box. We still have our guns.
Right now, you see the media not doing their job, not covering how our soldiers are being wounded, how Iraqis are being killed. We have to break that barrier. We're speaking truth to power. We're looking them right in their eyes and confronting them on their lies.
Not be afraid, Margaret. It's time to call. We know the truth.
We need a new investigation, sir.
It's almost like the entire New World Order apparatus has been scripted as if it was written like a screenplay.
Just one more false flag bombing away from martial law.
The windows are still in.
A massive conspiracy in the highest levels of government to contrive the point that an actual airplane came crashing into the building and people died.
One of the favorite tactics of defenders of the false mainline reality that we're fed is, well, you guys just want to claim it's all a conspiracy because it makes it simpler for you. What do you mean? I want to believe it's the government because it makes me feel better. That's 1,000 times more terrifying and frightening.
That was the trailer for the forthcoming documentary New World Order, the movie. Coming soon from the independent film channel, IFC, I believe that's the new film by Bruce Sanofsky and Joe Berlinger of Brothers Keeper and Paradise Lost documentary fame. Not exactly sure of the air dates, but very interesting, and especially when you have good mainline documentary artists, filmmakers covering our subjects, you hope for a more fair and, dare I say it, balanced coverage. Kicked it off with Crafty by New Order. And of course, I didn't exactly plan to have New Order and then New World Order, but of course, synchronicities, it all makes it work out. Love New Order. That, I believe, is one of their last new singles, but that's going back a couple of years. And welcome, my friends, to the B-side of episode 110 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster, coming to you from my living room in downtown Portland, Oregon. It's about 20 after 9, Thursday evening, February 12th, 2009, of course, the day before Friday the 13th. And I'll have to admit, I'm in kind of a shitty mood, fighting a cold that, of course, I got probably from work. Of course, all the sick people at work. And we're battling a mouse problem at home, and my upstairs neighbors are loud and annoying, so I'm kind of grr, but doing this, of course, helps me kind of get it out and work it out, so I'll try not to be too much of a dick, but the other catch is I have to work tomorrow on Friday afternoon at noon, which, of course, you know, the Friday show runs from 10 a.m. to noon here on the West Coast Pacific Time on the Portland Radio Authority and RevereRadioNetwork.com. So I'm going to crank out this show, try and get some sleep without the neighbors or the mouse or my cold keeping me awake. Get up tomorrow, do the show, leave immediately, rush to work, and be a little bit late, all the while having the new episodes not yet uploaded. Grrr. New World Order, the movie. You can watch that whole trailer, and you can see more from coreofcorruption.com. The other thing is, I may totally be wrong, and this may not be the Sinofsky-Berlinger documentary. However, some of the links are there for you. New World Order, the movie, coming soon from the Independent Film Channel. So let's get into the news, the real news, as CorbettReport.com would say. First, North American Union updates border wars, extradition, and internment. First, from the Associated Press, Mexican drug violence spills over into the U.S. And again, there are times when it feels like deja vu or the recent Groundhog Day that we cover the same stories as they slowly build. And so, of course, I've had headlines posted up before. Mexican drug violence spills over into the U.S., but it's happening. Just as government officials had feared, the drug violence raging in Mexico is spilling over into the U.S. Authorities are reporting a spike in killings, kidnappings, and home invasions connected to Mexico's murderous cartels. And to some policymakers' surprise, much of the violence is happening not in towns along the border, where it was assumed the bloodshed would spread, but a considerable distance away in places such as Phoenix and Atlanta. Investigators fear the violence could erupt elsewhere around the country because the Mexican cartels are believed to have set up drug dealing operations all over the U.S. in such far-flung places as Anchorage, Alaska, Boston, and Sioux Falls, South Dakota. The violence follows the drugs, said David Cuthbert, son agent in charge of the FBI's office in the border city of El Paso, Texas. Links in there to KXXV.com, local coverage, and of course, just more Google research links for you to read about drug violence raging in Mexico. That's not all on that topic, but of course, I have to butt in and say that you should decriminalize most drugs, if not all drugs. Legalize all of them. Cut the crime out. Cut the gangsters out. But I know how it works. The gang and the government, there's no difference. As I believe Jane's Addiction sang many years ago before they went horribly downhill. But I digress. From Reuters, however, Mexico drug gangs threaten cops on the radio and then kill them. Mexican drug gangs near the U.S. border are breaking into police radio frequencies to issue chilling death threats to cops, which they then carry out, demoralizing security forces in a worsening drug war. "You're next, bastard. We're going to get you," an unidentified drug gang member said over the police radio in the city of Tijuana after naming a policeman. The man also threatened a second cop by name and played foot-stomping Narco Corridor music, popular with drug cartels, over the airwaves. Interestingly enough, let's hit the link and go to Wikipedia. Narco Corrido is a kind of Mexican music which evolved out of the Norteño folk corrido tradition, using a danceable accordion-based polka as a rhythmic bass. It references smugglers and contraband and more. So that's an interesting, bizarre musical side note to murderous drug gangs. "No one can help them," an officer named Jorge said of his threatened colleagues as he heard the threats in his patrol car. Sure enough, 2 hours later, the dead bodies of the two named policemen were found dumped on the edge of the city, their hands tied and bullet wounds in their heads. Mexico drug gangs threaten cops on the radio and then kill them. If we go to ElPasoTimes.com, the aforementioned El Paso, of course, where agent in charge of the FBI, David Cuthbertson, said the violence follows the drugs, which, of course, just makes me think of follow the money. But we don't like to look at the, you know, the source problems of things. I believe I've said this, but this is one of the first sort of like politically astute observations I had on my own. I finally, at some point, many, 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 many years ago, pre-9/11, pre any of this crazy shit, that it seemed like here we don't like to address the roots of problems. We just like to throw money in a black hole and throw money at the problem that has already blown up in our face. However, from ElPasoTimes.com, Texas crafts plan for Mexico collapse. Crafty. Texas officials are working on a plan to respond to a potential collapse of the Mexican government and the specter of thousands fleeing north in fear for their lives after recent reports indicated the country could be on the verge of chaos. You hope for the best, plan for the worst. Catherine Sessinger, spokeswoman for Slick Rick Governor Perry. At this point, we've got a contingency plan that's in development. Late last year, the U.S. Department of Defense issued a report that listed Pakistan and Mexico as countries that could rapidly collapse. The report came after similar alarms sounded by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and former U.S. drug czar Barry McCaffrey. I think their fears are well grounded, Texas Homeland Security Director Steve McCraw told lawmakers recently at a border security briefing. I believe probably what he meant to say. Their fears are well founded, but I guess well grounded works as well. So, building the story from Paul Joseph Watson. Internment camps readied for mass illegal influx? The news that Texas officials are working on a contingency plan, or working on contingency plans, rather, to deal with a sudden influx of illegals following a collapse of the Mexican government has sparked fears that FEMA detention camps, the expansion of which is the current, or rather is the subject of current legislation in Congress, are being readied to detain thousands of illegals as well as American citizens. According to the aforementioned El Paso Times report, quote, Texas officials are working on a plan to respond to a potential collapse and, of course, the specter of thousands fleeing north. Again, quoting McCraw, he said that a preliminary plan was in place that dealt only with law enforcement concerns and did not address humanitarian needs. Such a plan is likely to include designated internment locations, including national emergency centers, to be located on military installations for the purpose of providing, quote, temporary housing, medical and humanitarian assistance to individuals and families dislocated due to an emergency or major disaster, the expansion of which under FEMA is codified under H.R. 645, otherwise known as the National Emergency Centers Act. We covered that on the previous episode, and we will be covering it further on episode 111, the next episode. So, just chill for the next episode. Finally, under this NAU update posting, Border Wars, Extradition, and Internment, Army Deserter Returns from Canada. From the Associated Press, sporting a dragon tattoo on his forearm and skulls on both biceps, Cliff Cornell's tough exterior dissolves into tears as he reflects on his return to the Army 4 years after he fled to Canada to avoid the war in Iraq. I'm nervous, scared, Cornell said, wiping puffy eyes beneath his sunglasses at a Savannah hotel after a three-day bus ride from Seattle. I'm just not a fighter. I know it sounds funny, but I have a really soft heart. Cornell, 29, of Mountain Home, Arkansas, planned to turn himself in to military police at Fort Stewart, where he'll likely face criminal charges for abandoning his unit before deployed to Iraq in January 05. He said he fled because he doesn't think the war has improved the lives of Iraqis and couldn't stomach the thought of killing. During my training, I was ordered that if anyone came within so many feet of my vehicle, I was to shoot to kill, said Cornell, who enlisted in 02 but never deployed to war, saying, quote, I didn't join the military to kill innocents. Some of the links in there will take you to afterdowningstreet.org as well as WSAV.com. That, I believe, is the local report. Cliff Cornell turns himself in to the Army after 4 years of desertion, and courage2resist.org/Cliff Cornell. As we've covered some of the deserters, war resistors, conscientious objectors, heroes, the names of which escape me, there definitely seems to be, at least, if not in complete reality, at least in the media representation, a new boosting of this, showing, don't you fucking quit. We'll get you. But now let's move to the latest 9/11 updates. Fires, liars, debates, and bombs. First, of course, one of the more interesting stories in the last week within the realm of 9/11 truth. Fire consumes WTC-7-size skyscraper, and oh, guess what? It didn't collapse. From Paul Joseph Watson. A fierce fire consumed all 44 floors of a skyscraper in Beijing, shooting 30-foot flames into the air, but unlike the similarly sized 47-story WTC-7, which suffered limited fires across 8 floors, the building in China did not collapse. The fire was burning from the ground floor to the top floor of the large building, the flames reflecting in the glass facade of the main CCTV tower next to the hotel and cultural center, reports the New York Times, with a link for you. CCTV, I believe, is the Chinese China Central Television, something like that. It doesn't, of course, stand for Chinese Communist TV or anything humorous. The 241-room Mandarin Oriental Hotel in the building was due to open this year. Flames were spotted around 7:45 p.m. and within 20 minutes the fire had spread throughout the building, dominating that part of the city. Hundreds of firefighters, vehicles, and police blocked off all approaches to the building, which was also set to house a luxury hotel due to be opened in 2009, with flames appearing to leap 20 to 30 feet into the air, adds the London Times. Link for you, timesonline.co.uk. Also links to the Seattle Times, History Commons, of course, the complete 9/11 timeline to read about Building 7 on the day of 9/11. You must see the photos. You must see the videos, neither of which I can display for you here within the show, because the videos, if one, they're not in Chinese, are just visuals of this massive structure burning. I don't want to spend a whole bunch of time on this. This isn't the first time that a massive building has been engulfed in worse, towering inferno flames. But of course, steel buildings don't fucking fall from fire. So this is another case, whether it's the Windsor Hotel or some of the others. Again, check the links, check the photos, check the videos. There are others and many still to come, probably follow-up articles from Paul Joseph Watson. Of course, debunkers claim Building 7 was hit by 757. That's why it fell, which of course it wasn't. And then the other follow-up article that I have posted up in part, Still Standing, the Building That Proves Building 7 Was Imploded, again from Paul Joseph Watson. New videos of the Mandarin Oriental Hotel fire in Beijing highlight the vivid contrast between the damage it suffered as it was completely consumed by roaring flames yet remained standing, and the comparative sporadic fires across just 8 floors that led to the complete free-fall collapse of Building 7. 9/11 truth debunkers are in a bind as to how to respond to the Beijing skyscraper fire because of the building's similarity in size to Building 7 and the gargantuan fire damage it suffered in comparison with the limited office fires witnessed in Building 7. The Mandarin Oriental Hotel is over 500 feet tall, just 100 feet short of the height of WTC-7. Again, more links to Wikipedia, read about the Mandarin Oriental Hotel or the Television Cultural Center, office fires, as well as stories from NPR and on and on. Someone did do a good video of a side-by-side comparison of the Mandarin Oriental Hotel fire in Beijing and, of course, the Solomon Brothers building, World Trade Center 7, side-by-side in a nice video as you can see them. Interestingly enough, even the China blog on Time.com has a story posted up, Liar, Liar, More on the Fire. Of course, calling to task the brutal, repressive censorship of China. So, the article goes into it. I'm not going to right now, but of course the censorship and the totalitarian setup is just a frosting on the cake of this whole story. More new videos from Scott Bingham and his relentless Freedom of Information Act requests to the FBI that he's been posting to the unfortunately named pentabomb.com, PENTTBOM.com, 13 new pentabomb.com videos. In reference to their FOIA requests, the FBI sent them 13 additional pentabomb videos. This is, of course, the second round of releases. Some of the first stuff we hit back in November of 2008, and that was, of course, new video of third plane over New York City on 9/11. Again, links to pentabomb.com as well as 911blogger.com. Interestingly enough, they do have some of the videos up on YouTube. So in each round of releases, it seems like they've put up a few on YouTube, and then I'm not sure what or how we're supposed to see the rest of them. So in one of the other YouTube videos, not the one we're going to cover here in just a second, on one of the new videos that they've posted up, WTC Ground Scene Part 1, the user on this YouTube account who's putting up these new pentabomb.com releases, Bronco2121, I don't know if this is the same person who's getting these, Scott Bingham or the people behind pentabomb.com, but some of them, some of the videos have redacted audio. They blank it out, which to me doesn't make any sense other than if it was someone saying, hey, my name, John Doe, I live at 123 Fake Street, here's my phone number, and you don't want that stuff out. But what random people, witnesses, on the scene say, I don't know why they block it out, and it just brings up the whole question of why don't you release all the shit instead of letting questions go on and on and on, but I know that they like questions to go on and on and on, because the trick is to get us to ask the wrong questions. So, interestingly enough, made a comment, and of course, this is always how I feel about comments. It doesn't get anything fucking done, and you just end up flame-warring and arguing with people. On one of the different videos I posted up, and still, the FBI has redacted some of the audio from this video, and still, no real video of the Pentagon hit, and still, the cover-up continues. Bronco2121 responded to my comment and said, and still, the 9/11 truth movement sits on its butt and complains. Someone else chimed in with, elaborate as what you mean by that statement. And I basically re-commented, said, I'm sending out these videos, posting them to a website, covering them on the radio show. Have I ever filed a FOIA request? No. If I'm sitting on my butt and complaining, what else should I do? And I haven't heard anything recent from Bronco2121, but we'll just see. Again, message boards, comment pages, waste of fucking time for me. The video we are going to cover is an interesting one. Pentagon witness to plane.
I better get back.
I was pulling in on the bus when I came in.
I was on 395 right there.
Right there,
dude. Right where that smoke's coming out. I was in my car. Yeah, a big-ass plane landed into the Pentagon, and then another one was coming right behind it. Big four-propeller, huge gray plane.
What happened to the second plane?
The second plane, it turned up. I don't know why.
I'm sorry, man. I gotta take that.
Nope.
I'm going to send post destroyers.
Hello?
I graduated from Zimpo.
I was standing right next to the fucking Pentagon. I swear to God.
Where are you going? Are you right in traffic?
That one, if you can make it out, and again, I implore you to go watch these videos. They're linked up. You can follow them all. All the new releases that are up from pentabomb.com. But in that video, in that clip, you just heard the guy say, dude, you know, big-ass plane. I saw it. It landed into the Pentagon, and that big plane behind it just took off. What is that? What's that about? Is there any mention of that? Is that the doomsday plane that Jamie McIntyre covered for CNN? Is that the Global Hawk master to that drone's slave that crashed into the Pentagon? I'm not saying there's no plane. I've never said no planes. On the sidebar, I don't say there's not UFOs. Oh, there's UFOs. They just aren't alien. So, maybe in the case of 9/11, there were fucking planes. They just perhaps weren't carried out the way the official story goes. Patsies. Maybe they thought they were, oh, I don't know, running a drill. So I won't keep harping on to that, but I know I've talked about it a lot, you know, even today with my girlfriend and told her about, you know, because I believe she asked who the pilot was of 77. I believe, and again, trying to study it, trying to know the pieces to at least discuss it, and again, I don't claim to fucking know the answers to any of it. Hani Hanjour was the terrorist who supposedly made this amazing move to crash into the Pentagon, Flight 77. He, of course, in previous months was denied the rental of a small Cessna, I believe, because the airport said, this guy sucks, we're not renting a plane to him. Somehow, a couple months later, miraculously, he's brilliant. The real pilot of the plane, I believe, was Chip Burlingame, who, of course, was a big-ass military guy. Hani Hanjour, little skinny bug-eyed dude. I believe Chip Burlingame had also maybe participated in some drills about terrorists hijacking planes in the months prior. And I believe a couple years later, maybe now a couple years ago, his daughter, I believe Wendy, died in a mysterious bed fire in her apartment. And her new boyfriend, he was okay. Questions, questions, questions. Staying on this topic, though, of questions and debunking, again from 9/11 blogger and from the worldwide home of free speech, Friday Night Fight Club on RevereRadioNetwork.com, Jason Burmes versus James Bennett, loose change versus screw loose change. It's a long debate, it's a little maddening, but you do hear an appearance, I believe, from Troy from West Virginia, which of course is always slightly funny. And, of course, makes me angry because now people think that that's what West Virginians are like. That guy. But, of course, Burmes and Bennett both bring up good points. Now, Bennett says that basically the conspiracy theorists, we don't follow the narrative of history and Occam's razor and blah-bitty-blah. We're just anomaly hunting. But, again, asking the questions, and I don't know what happened. That's why we're finding the anomalies to say, hey, I don't know exactly what happened. All I know is, from all these accounts, your account can't be true. But again, the good point from Bennett, even though he didn't quite explicate it, that's again the frustrating thing. We're going to touch on that a little bit later. When you're listening to, you know, when I'm listening to Burmes, or I'm listening to Lee Rogers, or Alex Answer, or no matter who it is, when you're hearing them on something else, maybe a debate or maybe a show, and they don't do it as well as you want, it's easy to fucking armchair quarterback and say, you should have done this, or you should have said that, but see what you're doing. Bennett didn't explicate it quite so well, but the point is, absence of evidence isn't evidence of absence. And that's true. Again, Friday Night Fight Club from a couple Fridays ago, audio debate, Jason Burmes versus Screw Loose Change. Last couple things on this 9/11 updates, fires, liars, debates, and bombs. From PressTV.ir, out of Iran. Ooh. UK terrorists plan new 9/11 attack on US? Question mark. The CIA has launched a large-scale espionage operation to prevent a suspected terror attack believed to be brewing in the UK on US soil. American spy chiefs believe a British-born Pakistani extremist entering the United States under the visa waiver program is likely to be the source of another 9/11 style attack. During recent intel briefings, U.S. President Barack Obama was warned by the CIA about the growing threat posed by British Islamist extremists to U.S. homeland security. That would be white Al-Qaeda. The CIA has informed the newly installed U.S. president that it has planted record numbers of informants in Britain's Pakistani community to monitor the 2,000 terrorist suspects identified by MI5, the British Security Service. A former CIA officer and an advisor to President Obama, Bruce Riedel, R-I-E-D-E-L, told the Sunday Telegraph that, quote, the British Pakistani community is recognized as probably Al-Qaeda's best mechanism for launching an attack against North America. Riedel, who has worked as a Middle East expert on the White House National Security Council, NSC, for three presidents, added, President Obama's national security team are well aware that this is a serious threat. Around 40% of CIA activity on homeland threats is now in the UK. This is quite unprecedented, said the British intelligence source. So that first part, President Obama's national security team are well aware that this is a serious threat, is from Bruce Riedel. Does that name sound familiar to listeners? Let's jump back to November 20th on MediaMonarchy.com. On the Obamasiya updates, the coming criminal cabinet, there was a nice little piece from Steve Watson, Obama's Council on Foreign Relations crew, and that was, of course, where we were starting to run down the shit list of the same elites that have been around. You just heard that guy's been at the NSC for three presidents. But gee, I thought those presidents were so different and had so many different ideas about policies because they're from different parties. But the coming criminal cabinet and the CFR crew, of course, includes Susan Rice, Anthony Lake, Z. Big Brzezinski, Richard Clark, Ivo Dalder, Dennis Ross, Lawrence Korb, Bruce Riedel. Oh, Bruce Riedel. Council on Foreign Relations. Brookings Institution. Former CIA analyst who wishes to expand the war on terror to fight Al-Qaeda across the globe. Considered to be the reason behind Barack Obama's hawkish views on Pakistan. And there you go. Back to November 20th. Laying it down on Bruce Riedel. There he is, fortunately being quoted by Press TV in a sort of backhanded way. And the interesting thing, it basically says CIA's on top of it. They're infiltrating the cell because this Pakistani extremist entered the U.S. on the visa waiver program, and he's likely to be the source of another 9/11 style attack. Well, gee. To me, it kind of sounds like you got the shit all tied up, and you should go ahead and bust it. But maybe you're just going to go ahead and let the attack go ahead. Like the first World Trade Center bombing. John Antisev being recorded, talking to Imad Salim. Inside job, yet again. So God knows what this will be. But Bruce Riedel, CFR, they put the memes, they put the talking points out there. They're omnipresent in a way. The last couple things here on this 9/11 updates posting are two from George Washington. Both nice little lists and nice little reminders of things and filled with links. Top counterterrorism experts question 9/11 and FBI believe that bombs were used on 9/11. But it segues oh so well into talking about the Obamasiya. The Jersey Girls, Kissinger, and Carter. Last Friday on episode 110, we covered, as I believe it was happening, or just after, so we didn't have the after-action reports. But we knew that the Obamasiya was meeting with 9/11 victims' family members and also from the USS Cole as well. So we had high hopes, not very high, but slightly high hopes, that, and I believe in the report that we had last week, was that an activist said, oh, there might be some fireworks, there might be some tough stuff. Bullshit. Now we've seen, and we're going to cite mainly the Washington Post, how 9/11 families applaud Obama at meeting on Guantanamo. See, that's what this swirl's about with. He's only meeting with them because he supposedly wants to close Guantanamo and these trials with beat-up patsies. And apparently, the Jersey girls have gone gaga for the Obama-sai and forgotten all about the unanswered questions of 9/11. You should, of course, always watch 9/11 Press for Truth. That's a good one, of course, to hand to people who aren't into this. It's not a conspiracy film at all. 9/11 Press for Truth. Of course, unanswered questions 9/11, link to 911truth.org, and just read the list of some of the, you know, top 40 unanswered questions. But from the Washington Post, President Obama assured relatives and victims of the September 11, 2001 attacks and the bombing of the USS Cole that he's keeping an open mind about how to handle the approximately 245 detainees held at the U.S. military prison at Guantanamo Bay, according to participants in an hour-long meeting at the White House. Lori Van Auken, leader of September 11th Advocates, a group headed by four New Jersey women who lost their husbands in the attacks, called the meeting impressive, saying Obama gave detailed answers to their questions and allayed many of their concerns. Let's Google real quick the word allayed. A-L-L-A-Y-E-D. To reduce the intensity of, relieve, to calm or pacify. That's Lori Van Auken's word. He was the meeting was impressive. He gave detailed answers and pacified many of their concerns. So it doesn't sound like they asked any hardcore questions or perhaps asked for a new investigation. None of that. She said the president did not rule out some form of military commissions in the future and acknowledged shortcomings in dealing with terrorism suspects in regular criminal courts. Quote, he acknowledged this was quite a mess and it really needed to be looked at by his legal team and by him, said Van Auken, whose husband, Kenneth Van Auken, was killed in the World Trade Center and whose group supports closing Guantanamo Bay. I think everybody recognized, no matter which side of the issue they're on, that this is a quagmire that will not be solved easily. Mindy Kleinberg, another member of the group, said Obama also made clear that, quote, nobody's going to get freed by the closing of Guantanamo. Nobody's just going to get freed by the closing of Guantanamo. I think the point was that you have to make sure they have a system in place that can actually work, said Kleinberg, whose husband, Alan Kleinberg, also died in the World Trade Center. I think even the people who came to the meeting who wanted to keep it open could understand his point of view. Links in there to the Deutsche Press Agency, as well as military.com, as well as sourcewatch.org to read about September 11th advocates, and of course historycommons.org to read the entries on Lori Van Auken and Mindy Kleinberg. McClatchy, Washington Post, more and more. And again, if you know some of the history, you know that they asked hardcore questions. The 9/11 Commission, of course, didn't address most of the questions they wanted. And if you recall, the first guy that they put in as the head of the 9/11 cover-up commission was Heinz Kissinger. What's he up to? And of course, you know, and you'll hear them tell the story in Press for Truth, that when they asked him to disclose his client list for Kissinger and Associates, he and spilled his coffee, and of course he was out soon thereafter. So they put in some oil banksters and cover-up guys, Hamilton and what's-his-name. But Kissinger, what's Kissinger up to? From Kurt Nemo, Kissinger sent to Russia to cut New World Order deal. It is yet another glaring example. There's no difference between Bush, Obama, or any fucking else appointed by the global elite to serve as presidential window dressing. The Daily Telegraph reports that former Reichsminister of State and Rockefeller minion, Henry Kissinger, was dispatched by the Obama administration to talk with Russian President Dmitry Medvedev about reducing stockpiles of nuclear warheads. The decision to send Kissinger to Moscow, taken by Obama when he was still president-elect, is part of a plan to overcome probable Republican objections in Congress, reports Adrian Blomfield, Moscow correspondent for the British paper, The Daily Telegraph. It is said the secret negotiations were conducted in December. Obama, of course, runs nothing, and the reprehensible octogenarian war criminal Kissinger was dispatched on orders of the elite, not Obama. It is said Kissinger had a sit-down with Putin, former Russian boss, at Putin's country house outside of Moscow. While the details of the ambitious initiative are yet to be revealed, the proposal to return to the negotiating table after 8 years of reluctance in Washington has been welcomed in Britain and elsewhere, again reports the Daily Telegraph. Links in there to read about Putin on the day of 9/11, again, thanks to History Commons. More on Heinz Kissinger from there as well. You could read about what a Reichsminister is thanks to a translated Wikipedia page. And again, Kissinger was sent in December to Russia. President-elect. Finally, on this first Obamasiah posting, the Jersey Girls, Kissinger and Carter, Newt Gingrich compares Obama to Carter. Which I add in the headline that, well, they are both Brzezinski puppets. From Politico.com, former House Speaker Newt Gingrich issued a sharp critique of Obama's speech before House Democrats in Williamsburg, Virginia. "It shrinks his presidency," said Gingrich last Friday at the American Enterprise Institute, AEI.org. "I thought last night's speech in Williamsburg actually was a lot more like Carter and a long way from Reagan." Gingrich spoke as part of a panel debate titled Rendezvous with Destiny, which examined the life and legacy of former President Ronald Reagan. Gingrich hosts a documentary film of the same name, produced by Citizens United, a conservative research organization. CitizensUnited.org, RendezvousWithDestinyMovie.com, and AEI.org. And you can read more about some of this phony left-right bullshit. RightWingNews.com has more on Rendezvous with Destiny.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Ronald Reagan was a rat for the House and American Activities Committee. That's what made his career. So whether he's like Carter, whether he's like Reagan, now I know, fortunately, in one of Webster Tarpley's new books, not sure which it is, Obama the Postmodern Coup or Barack H. Obama the Unauthorized Biography, he pulls out from the memory hole from Carter's own autobiography, where he talked about when he was even giving his inauguration speech that he looked out on all the faces and in his head knew, it was like, oh my fucking God, these people are going to be so disappointed because all the bullshit we're going to have to do. Change. Let's move to the second Obamasiah posting. Torture, Truth, Surge, and Purge. First, a headline from Raw Story. Unredacted documents reveal prisoners tortured to death. This is from today, February 12, 2009. Human rights groups accuse Pentagon of running secret prison, cooperating with CIA ghost detention programs. Of course, grisly things from the ACLU. You can see documents, FOIAs, more and more and more. Even stuff from Scott Horton at Harper's and a catalog of documents relating to torture under the Bush administration on the ACLU.org page. So that just sets the table for this one from The Guardian, torture evidence hidden from Obama. U.S. defense officials are preventing Obama from seeing evidence that a former British resident held in Guantanamo Bay has been tortured. Tortured said tortured prisoner, his lawyer, said that last night, as campaigners in the Foreign Office prepared for the man's release in as little as a week. Clive Stafford Smith, the director of the legal charity reprieve.org.uk, which represents Ethiopian-born Binyam Mohammed, B-I-N-Y-A-M, Muhammad. Clive Stafford Smith sent Obama evidence of what he called truly medieval abuse, but substantial parts were blanked out so the president couldn't read it. In the letter to the president, Stafford Smith urges him to order the disclosure of the evidence. Links in there. The letter from Clyde Stafford Smith is a PDF for you to download. More on Binyam Mohammed. Links to reprieve.org.uk. Change you can laugh at, however, from the Swampland blog on Time, Obama backs Bush on rendition and secrecy. We've covered this before. We'll cover it again. But it's true. In a San Francisco federal court, five men who claim they were abducted and sent to foreign countries to be tortured have been battling the Bush administration, which claimed that state secrets and national security would be put at risk if their case were allowed to proceed. On Monday, the Obama Justice Department lawyers told the Ninth Circuit that they agreed with the Bush administration argument. The Justice Department lawyer said at one point that once the judge reviews the classified evidence, they, quote, will see that this case cannot be litigated. Of course, shock and dismay, but well thought out and well versed, well documented arguments from Lynn Greenwald and the aforementioned Scott Horton. So that's, of course, the Swampland blog on Time says, unexpected headline, Obama backs Bush on rendition case in secrecy. But Chris Floyd from Empire Burlesque, of course, points it out a little better. Progressives surprised by Obama's non-surprises. There is certainly a great deal of slack-jawed shock going around these days, especially in progressive circles where pundits, commentators, analysts, and kibitzers continually find themselves reeling from yet another inexplicable move by the Obama administration to uphold the core principles of their predecessors. Being enriching the rich, extending the empire, and enhancing the authoritarian power of a thoroughly militarized state. For example, Glenn Greenwald and Scott Horton at Harper's, among many others, are deeply shocked by Team Obama's draconian maneuvers to quash a court case based on clear, abundant, and credible evidence that American security forces and their corporate accomplices colluded to inflict horrendous torture on a gulag captive whose only crime, it turns out, was reading a satirical magazine article, with a link to more about that. While Horton, Scott Horton, struggles to find some small justification for what he sees as an unwise decision, Greenwald is scathing and detailed in denouncing Obama's action, in which the new president seeks to uphold and seize for himself some of the most egregious claims of arbitrary tyrannical power once advanced by George Unitary Executive Bush. It's good to see these worthy gentlemen, lawyers both, give us chapter and verse on this act of evil, yet still one must ask, why all the surprise? We've cited and quoted and posted Chris Floyd, one of the best writers out there. He said all along, it's like, seriously, you're surprised that these moves are happening? Obama's never once really claimed to be all that progressive. They pretty much laid out what he wanted to do. Even in debates back in 2007, I believe, where he said, no, we should get Pakistan. Even Hillary and others are like, whoa, dude, that's a little much. But of course, the specter of Brzezinski and the trilaterals covers it all. There is, I suppose, good news in that there is a growing chorus of calls for what they're unfortunately calling a truth commission. Of course, not the kind of truth commission that I would like, because it's probably going to be a limited hangout thing. They're going to burn some underlings, say everything's okay, and move along. That's even if we get into it. Now, again, the growing chorus looks like we may. But, of course, once Biden, once those folks come in and say, you know, we need to look forward. And then that's what all the lemming Democrats, well-meaning folks they are, will do. You know, we just need to keep moving forward. As even a family member by marriage said to me once when we did have a brief discussion of 9/11. She said, what's the point? What's that really going to get at if we go into 9/11? Why are we going to dig that scab? I believe we'll see on tomorrow's episode 111 as we dig into the JFK case, some of the latest updates there, which again reverberate through the decades to this very day, to this very moment. If we don't have all the information, how are you going to make good decisions? If the last 40 years is built on a fucking lie, I'd kind of like to know. And I think if a lot of people were honest, they would too. Or, like Garrison said, let justice be done, though the heavens fall. But I digress. Patrick Leahy has called for a truth commission. A commission to investigate possible Bush-era abuses. Leahy joined Microsoft National Broadcasting Corporation General Electric Air America's Rachel Maddow to talk about his proposal. After speaking with Leahy, Maddow concludes that most Democratic leaders in Congress support conditional prosecution of officials for crimes committed during the Bush administration. Links in there to HistoryCommons.org to read about Patrick Leahy, to see about how, after he got some anthrax in the mail, he said, Patriot Act, yes. Also links to Senate.gov in the speech where Patrick Leahy, Democrat from Vermont, first mentioned this truth commission. A couple articles from Consortium News, one from Jason Leopold, and I believe the other is from, let's see, David Swanson. Much better. Leopold's article, Leahy Calls for Truth Commission. Swanson's article, The Fallacies of a Truth Commission.
You're going to have some people are going to say, let's go ahead and prosecute everybody. That could take 10 or 15 years. Others want to ignore everything. I don't agree with that. But this might be a middle ground where we could at least find out what happened. When I first came to the Senate, Frank Church had just had a commission like that, looked into the spying on anti-war protesters, some of the abuses of both the FBI and the CIA, and just bringing the matters to light. I brought about some much-needed reforms, changes that lasted for a couple decades. I think we have to do the same thing here, because there were abuses of the law. There were things done that America should not be doing. Let's find out about it.
What if a truth commission did a thorough investigation of the type that you're describing, and they found that, in fact, horrible crimes were committed? If there wouldn't be prosecutions, how would saying, well, now we know, and they all legally got away with it, how would that stop these things from happening again?
I think the fact that it becomes very, very public, and the way they find out about it, makes it very clear to the next person, you try the same thing, you are going to be found out, you are going to be prosecuted. You're also going to have some people that will refuse to, perhaps refuse to testify, even though offered immunity. With the evidence gathered from the others, they can be prosecuted. And of course, anybody could be prosecuted for perjury. It is not, and I'm a former prosecutor, it's not a perfect way of doing it, but it may be the only way to get the truth out. And I think the only way you're going to stop a future administration from being tempted to do some of the same things if the truth has come out. It's already been done on the torture issue with some of the military commissions when immunity has been granted. The House has already granted immunity, the House of Representatives immunity to a couple of witnesses. And you either grant enough immunity to get the truth out, or you don't get it at all, because otherwise you're just going to have constant stonewalling.
Just to be clear, you would suggest that you would offer immunity in exchange for prosecution, in exchange for testifying, if need be, immunity from prosecution. But if people still elected to not testify, immunity obviously would not apply to them, and they could be subject to criminal investigation, prosecution.
Well, the only way they would have immunity would be if they testify, and testify thoroughly, because they'd be asked under oath, have you given us all the information? You withhold, that's perjury, and you'd be prosecuted for that.
Dr. Nada. Jonathan Turley, professor of constitutional law at George Washington University. As ever, John, great thanks for your time tonight.
Hi, Keith.
Why model a commission for preventing future executive branch abuses on a commission that failed to prevent the very executive branch abuses you're looking to prevent again?
Well, you know, it's incredible because truth commissions are generally have been used by emerging democracies, often third world countries, countries that have nascent legal systems, countries that are trying to create new governments. They're not associated with a government that's supposedly the leader of the rule of law. We don't have any question about the obligation of all these treaties. There's no question that torture occurred here. There's no question it was a war crime. And so the only reason to have a commission of this kind is to avoid doing what we're obligated to do under a treaty. And the fact is that these members of Congress view this as a very inconvenient time to fight on principle. But they would do us all a favor if they just save the money on another useless commission. They just take the old 9/11 commission report, rip off the cover, and put a new cover on, and call it a day. Because it is shameful that we would be calling for this type of commission. Everyone knows what we're doing. We're in violation of our obligations now. We were supposed to investigate. It's not up to President Obama. It's not up to Senator Leahy. We're obligated to investigate. This whole discussion in front of the whole world is basically saying that we are not going to comply with the promise we made, not to ourselves, but to the world.
Also, whether you're basing it on the church model or the South African model, they elevated these crimes that they are selected to address above regular law and order, or certainly distinguished them from regular law and order. Regardless of what they might find and however valuable that might be for a historical record, does not using a special forum inherently validate the Bush claim that the regular rules did not apply to his presidency because of the exigent circumstances?
It absolutely does. I mean, we need to be honest. There is great love for President Obama, and I have great respect for him. But you cannot say that you believe that no one is above the law and block the investigation of the war crimes by your predecessor. It is a position without principle. It is because you believe it's politically inconvenient. And by simply saying that you will do a special commission is like saying you have special justice. But at the end of the day, no one believes that people will be prosecuted for a known war crime. And when we do that, then we will become accessories. Those crimes from President Bush will become our crimes. His shame will become our collective shame. That's what happens when you protect someone accused of war crimes from even an investigation.
Is fear of Republican blowback in the future a valid reason to refrain from prosecuting, or do Democrats to some degree risk incentivizing Republicans to threaten to that blowback or other kinds of it even more and more?
Well, the Democrats are going to have to decide whether they want to detach themselves from principle, start their control of this government with an act of the most unprincipled sort. One of the treaties that we signed and helped write says there are no excuses and no defenses for ordering torture. We have write those rules, and we are about to break them. So yes, there might be a backlash. The Republican Party may want to be the party that embraces torture and fights from being held accountable under treaties that we signed and promised the world. The question for members of both parties, whether this is the matter that they want to lose that degree of principle. And, you know, this is the time, and it comes in every career, when you have to decide whether you are a statesman or just one more politician looking for the next election.
Jonathan Turley of George Washington University, and speaking, I think, from the pages of our history books.
Constitutional law professor Jonathan Turley discussing why Leahy wants this panel to have power to grant immunity and serve subpoenas. So that was the second clip there, again, from the Microsoft National Broadcasting Corporation General Electric Keith Olbermann countdown. That coming from Raw Story, Raw Replay. Turley pleads for prosecution of Bush crimes. That, of course, goes right along with Leahy and his Truth Commission and Rachel Maddow and all that. CIA warns Obama that UK terrorists are biggest threat to the U.S. That kind of sounds familiar, but that's from Cryptogon.com. However, from Danger Room, time for a civilian Afghan surge. Admiral Mike Mullen, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, has a message for the State Department and other civilian agencies. It's time to step up to the plate in Afghanistan. The Obama administration has kicked off a 60-day policy review of Afghanistan and Pakistan strategy, Options may include reinforcing the Afghanistan mission by sending as many as 20 to 30,000 more troops. Speaking Monday to soldiers at Fort Drum, New York, Admiral Mike Mullen, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said it was time for a commensurate surge of diplomats and U.S. government civilians to reinforce stability operations and reconstruction. It is not possible to win this or succeed in Afghanistan militarily alone, Mullen said, according to a Pentagon news item. DefenseLink.mil, Reuters UK, AFP, French Agency Press, and of course Danger Room for more on all that. Nation building. The American Empire. That's what apparently we do. It's our business. It's apparently the only business we do, because we sure as hell don't, you know, make anything tangible that people want. Which is why our fake-ass economy is collapsing on purpose. His quote, "It's not possible to win this or succeed in Afghanistan militarily alone," of course, brings up the idea of, or not the idea, brings up the thought and the quote from Obama saying, we need a civilian national security force that's just as strong, just as powerful, just as well-funded as our regular military. UPIAsia.com has an article about Obama's Afghan surge and the heroin trade. Of course, that's a lot of times the main deal. Remember, their God is different than your God. Their God is gold, oil, and drugs. Obama's Afghan surge in the heroin trade. However, from Kurt Nimmo, Obama's change, of course, is expanding the power of the aforementioned NSC and the shadow government. We, of course, heard mention just a little bit ago of the National Security Council. I believe, oh, was that Bruce Rydell? CFR? New guy? Pakistan? It's all kind of tying together, isn't it? Expanding the power of the NSC and shadow government, from Kurt Nimmo. On February 8th, Karen DeYoung, writing for the CIA's favorite newspaper, The Washington Post, with a link for you. President Obama plans to order a sweeping overhaul of the National Security Council, expanding its membership and increasing its authority to set strategy across a wide spectrum of international and domestic issues. According to National Security Advisor and former Marine Commandant James L. Jones, that's Jim Jones, the quote, "world that we live in has changed so dramatically in this decade that organizations that were created to meet a certain set of criteria no longer are terribly useful." Obama's going to issue a presidential directive that will, quote, "expand the NSC's reach far beyond the range of traditional foreign policy issues and turn it into a much more elastic body," end quote, from the Post. So dangerous is the world now, according to the argument offered by Jones, the NSC will apparently encompass, quote, "the Energy Department, Commerce Department, and Treasury, all the law enforcement agencies, the Drug Enforcement Administration, all of those things." After Obama issues his directive, the NSC will strive to embrace a broader membership and roll these government agencies into the national security state, initially created in 1947 when Congress passed the National Security Act, which of course gave birth to the CIA. In addition to the NSC, this legislation created the CIA and institutionalized under the rubric of national security the justification for new weapon systems, huge military expenditures, and military interventions in the Third World. So, signed by Truman, National Security Act, 1947. There may have been some other trial runs, but I believe the first big run, first big action, first big black op action was, of course, Operation Ajax, overthrowing democratically elected pro-Western leader Mohammad Mossadegh in Iran. And 56 years later, it still goes on. 62 years later, it still goes on. The last few things on this Obamasiah torture, truth, surge, and purge posting are just some headlines from the Washington Times and from military.com, which is probably an Associated Press report. Obama revisits photo ban on soldiers' coffins, and then the follow-up was Gates orders review of coffin photo ban. That, of course, would be the Bush-era banning on photos of dead soldiers coming back to the Dover military base. So we'll see if they lift that veil. Obama orders review of cybersecurity. That's coming from news.technology.findlaw.com, and that is too an Associated Press report. President Barack Obama on Monday ordered a 60-day review of the nation's cybersecurity to examine how federal agencies use technology to protect secrets and data. Cybersecurity. You know, of course, we've cited all the cyber threats, and there's a cyber 9/11 in the works. Time.com, as well as many other places, covered what is ultimately a good story. It's not every single 100% thing terrible coming from the new Obama-Saya puppet administration. Obama and the HuffPo questions sparked more questions. That, of course, refers to at a recent White House press conference, Barack Obama called on Sam Stein of HuffingtonPost.com, thereby opening up the door, at least, to internet media. Of course, it goes to the straight-up mainline biggies. But some kind of change? Bad news on the assassination front. Man held at U.S. Capitol had a rifle in his truck. That's from Reuters. Man with gun looking for Obama arrested in D.C. That's from the Deutsche Press Agency. Police arrest armed man with a delivery for Obama. This is from abc.net.au out of Australia. U.S. Capitol Police arrested a man who showed up at a traffic barrier saying he had, quote, a delivery, end quote, for President Barack Obama, and then revealed he was armed. The man drove up to one of the barricades and told us he had a delivery for President Obama, said Sergeant Kimberly Schneider. Under questioning, he admitted to having a rifle in his truck, prompting officers to arrest him and take him to Capitol Police headquarters where charges against him were pending. Mr. Obama was aboard Air Force One at the time of the incident, and I have lost track of how many bizarre, strange death threats that Obama has received, even well before he even took office. Bad news anyway, you cut it. Obama cannot resolve the U.S. financial crisis. This, again, from Press TV. Oh, that's right. I meant to change the headline there to include who said that. President Barack Obama and his team in the White House cannot resolve the current U.S. financial crisis, says former Cuban leader Fidel Castro. Obama and Rambo Emanuel and all the brilliant politicians and economists they brought together won't suffice to resolve the growing problems of the U.S. capitalist society. And he's right. Finally, from the Washington Times, an op-ed from Andrew Breitbart, the con artists have taken over the asylum. And that closes out Torture, Truth, Surge, and Purge on the Obama-Saya. Now it's time to break out the bong. And again, the bong hit heard around the world, still reverberating, still, of course, tabloid distractions, and it's the water cooler bit of discussion. However, it is actually relatively important because it's dealing with the draconian bullshit drug war. Phelps bong photo leads to arrest of 8. So, from Raw Story and Raw Replay, as well as the flashback to last week from MediaMonarchy.com, Phelps unites pot smokers. And from WISTV.com, we're going to hear 2 different clips. We're first going to hear just the local WISTV.com report on the arrest in South Carolina of 8 people connected to Phelps Gate. We're going to have some updates, and then there's a long CNN clip that we're going to check out. So, the bong hit heard round the world.
Seven, we have breaking news on Michael Phelps tonight. Good evening, I'm Ben Hoover.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. I'm Dawn Dee Mercer Plank. Richland County deputies have made a number of arrests during the investigation of a party where a now infamous picture of Olympic champion Michael Phelps was taken.
In that photo, Phelps appears to be smoking marijuana. Senior reporter Jack Kinsey joins us now tonight with more on the story. Jack.
Well, Ben and Dondi, officially, Richland County Sheriff Leon Lott is not commenting on the status of this investigation, and no criminal charge has been filed against Phelps at this time. But the Sheriff's Department has been working on this case since Lott told us a week ago he would try to determine whether Phelps broke the law. As we said at 6, the party took place in November at a house on Blossom Street near Five Points. This was where someone snapped the photo of Phelps taking a hit on a marijuana pipe called a bong. Lott says the picture was an indication of illegal activity, and he said he could not ignore the violation just because Phelps is a celebrity. Well, we've now learned that since investigators began building their case, they've made 8 arrests, 7 for drug possession, 1 for distribution. These are arrests that resulted after the Sheriff's Department served search warrants. We've also learned the department found and confiscated that bong. My sources tell me the owner of the bong, who was not at the party, was trying to sell it on eBay for as much as $100,000. He is now one of the 8 who has been charged. The Sheriff's Department has evidence that matches the photo of Phelps to the house on Blossom. That house is in the city, but the Columbia Police Department decided not to initiate or take an active role in the investigation. Now, also weighing in on the Sheriff's actions then in Gandhi is Governor Mark Sanford. On the Fox News Channel last night, Geraldo Rivera asked Sanford whether Phelps should be prosecuted. And the quote from Sanford was, "I don't see what it gets at this point." His spokesman told us tonight that he is, the governor is, letting that quote stand.
It is a startling image. A young man admired by millions, captured on camera, smoking marijuana. Olympic champion Michael Phelps today confirmed the rumors and said he is indeed the man in the photo.
Say it ain't so. Is this really America's Olympic hero, smoking pot from a bong?
I sort of held him in high esteem, especially for my sons who are athletes. So yeah, it does kind of hurt me.
This amateur photo of a man in profile lighting a bong, lips to pipe, began circulating on the internet this weekend.
He's human. Let the man live. You know, if he wants to smoke a marijuana joint, I don't see anything wrong with it. I mean, if it's not in the system 24/7, it's not steroids.
Rumor became fact after London's News of the World published the picture, and Phelps fessed up, saying, "I engaged in behavior which was regrettable and demonstrated bad judgment. I am 23 years old, and despite the successes I've had in the pool, I acted in a youthful and inappropriate way, not in a manner people have come to expect from me. For this, I am sorry. I promise my fans and the public it will not happen again." But in 2004, Phelps was arrested in his home state of Maryland on suspicion of drunk driving. Then he told ESPN, "I'm 19, but was taught that no matter how old you are, you take responsibility for your actions, which I will do. I'm extremely sorry." He could be sorrier if public support starts to dwindle.
It really disappoints me because I thought he was this great all-American athlete that was, abiding by the rules.
The U.S. Olympic Committee agrees, but says they are confident that going forward, Michael will consistently set the type of example we all expect from a great Olympic champion. But the jury is still out on advertisers who've committed more than $100 million to the Phelps brand.
Michael Phelps was staying with a friend during his November trip to the University of South Carolina, where the photo was apparently taken. That friend now has this to say to our affiliate WIS: "It was just some jealous kid at Carolina, and I hope that the situation dies down quickly." Well, the photos could cost Phelps dearly when it comes to endorsements. By the time the Olympics ended, Phelps had signed up as a spokesman with some of the biggest names in the business. Among the companies that sell products associated with Phelps: Visa, Hilton, Omega Watches, AT&T, and Kellogg Cereals. We want to know what you think about this and about the argument for decriminalizing marijuana. Should pot be legal? We'll take a closer look and get your thoughts. Make sure you log on to Twitter, to Facebook, to MySpace, or iReport.com. Become part of our community. Let's talk more now about Michael Phelps, a story that has so many people talking tonight. Many of you are emailing us about it. The record-setting Olympic swimmer confirms he's the man seen in this image smoking marijuana at a party last fall. Phelps says he's sorry, but the picture could have a lasting impact. I want to bring in Vicki Michaela. She has heard Michael Phelps for years at USA Today. When you heard the news, I'm sure you heard the rumors that were floating around this weekend and the picture on some of the sites, but when it was confirmed, your thoughts?
My thoughts instantly were back to 2004 when he was charged with a DUI not long after the Olympics, and something he told me before the Beijing Olympics, actually, which was that his coach prefers him to be in the pool because he usually gets into trouble when he's out of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, he is a young man, and that was back in 2004. He was 19, 23 now. He's a young man, and young people do experiment. Not saying that's right, but it's just sort of the rigors of growing up. What's the question here is judgment. You know, since he'd been in trouble before with the DUI, one would think that he would know better, and also what he's putting on the line, Vicki, hundreds of millions of dollars.
I have to think that maybe he's not fully aware of what he is putting on the line. I can't imagine that he's not, given how exposed he was to all of the fame and everything that happened to him last summer. But I think you get into this situation and you think, I am just a young man, I'm at a party, why not? Mm-hmm. And you don't realize that this kind of thing is going to just explode and it's going to be everywhere.
I'll give you a second, clear your throat as I ask this next question. When you spent time with him, and you did spend a substantial amount of time covering him for USA Today, anything in his personality that would make you think that he would do this? You said his coach said he liked him to be in the pool because he was out of trouble in the pool, but was he just a typical young man or did he seem troubled to you?
I don't think he seeks trouble. I think that when he gets out of the pool...
Did he seem troubled? Because we know about his childhood. We've read about his father not being there. Did he seem troubled in any way to you?
Not at all. He seems to have a very solid family situation. His mom is, as I think a lot of people saw at the Olympics, one of the best moms, and he's got his sisters, and he doesn't seem like a troubled young man at all. No.
Vicki right. Michaelis from USA Today, thank you very much. And by the way, just from an unscientific poll that we're taking here at CNN, about 98% of the responses we're getting saying that he's a kid and he just made a mistake and it all is forgiven. So lots of people are reacting to the story tonight. Here's what Ravi Raven says. He is young and he admitted it. I forgive him. Exactly what I just said. Another viewer writes, at least Phelps was honest, unlike our other All-American athletes, Bonds, McGuire, Clemens. A phenomenon, L9, says, I believe that nobody is perfect and he should be forgiven. Ashley Big Fine says, it's great he was honest about it. Not so great that he serves as a role model to so many. What are your thoughts on this Michael Phelps story? Also, this is also bringing up the discussion about decriminalizing marijuana. We're going to talk about that in a no-holds-barred conversation coming up. Log on to Twitter, Facebook, MySpace, or iReport.com. Tell us what you're thinking. We will definitely get it on the air.
To me, I think marijuana should be legalized myself. What's the difference between that and drinking? You know, that's the way I look at it.
A lot of you are commenting tonight on this. Here's what Zip Prop says. No big deal. He's young and under a lot of stress. My question is about the one who took picture. What a friend. Jealousy, jealousy. Irish Girl 2 says, it's good he cleared it up so quickly. He should have been a bit more responsible, though. And someone else writes, what does it say about the harmlessness of pot if the most winning Olympian in history smokes it? That's a good question. Make sure you join our community. Log on to any one of those platforms right there and tell us what you're thinking. We'll get it on the air. That last comment leads us to this. This controversy over Olympic gold medalist Michael Phelps' photograph smoking marijuana has many people, you know, saying, so what? So we want to know, should marijuana be legalized or decriminalized? Our guest tonight is Bruce Merkin of the Marijuana Policy Project, a group that advocates regulating marijuana the same way alcohol and tobacco are regulated. Thank you so much for joining us. I can tell you right off that people are going to say it's a slippery slope. If you start with marijuana, then where do you stop? Does it go to cocaine? Does it go to other illegal substances?
Well, that makes no sense at all. You know, alcohol is legal, but because alcohol is legal doesn't mean that marijuana or anything else has to be legal. And the fact is that when we're talking about so-called recreational drugs, marijuana is, by any objective scientific standard, safer than alcohol. It's less addictive, it's less massively less toxic, and it's orders of magnitude less likely to cause people to become violent or aggressive when they use it.
Well, but people say that it's a gateway drug. Once you start in a slippery slope this way, once you start with marijuana, then that leads you on to even more toxic or more dangerous drugs.
Well, once again, there is a vast trove of data that shows that that's not true. Every independent scientific body that's ever looked at the so-called gateway theory theory has debunked it. There is no evidence that marijuana causes people to use other drugs. None. Zero.
So, well, let's talk about on the campaign trail. Now President Barack Obama was a senator then, and a presidential candidate said he was for medical marijuana or decriminalizing it. And this is the quote, basically saying my attitude is science and that doctors suggest the best palliative care and the way to relieve pain and suffering is through medical marijuana. And then goes on and says that it should be, of course, prescribed by doctors. But then also in a campaign stop, he was asked about it, and someone said, did you inhale? Unlike other presidents, did you inhale? He said, I did. Obama said to a loud applause and laughter, it's not something that I'm proud of. It was a mistake, but you know, I'm not going to, never understood that line. The point was to inhale. That was the point, to do it. So apparently he's done it in the past. The reason I read that is because I want to know what you think your chances are with the new administration possibly getting some sort of decriminalization of marijuana through.
Well, we're certainly aware that this is not item number one on the Obama administration's agenda. Rumor has it there's stuff going on with the economy he needs to deal with.
But you say if we start taxing this, it could actually help the economy.
Well, indeed it could, but I think realistically what we can expect from Obama in the short term is to keep his campaign promise, which he did make quite specifically, which is to stop the federal attacks on the 13 states that allow medical use of marijuana.
Okay, hang on.
He'll do that.
All right. Yeah. Listen, we could run, but I want to know real quickly. Let's get back to Michael Phelps. Do you think this helps or hurts your case?
Well, I just think it's sad that this incredibly accomplished young man feels like he's in a position of having to apologize and act like he did something terrible for relaxing with something that's safer than beer.
All right, Bruce Merkin, we appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right.
Is now the time to decriminalize marijuana? That was a long clip, the second half, the longer piece coming from CNN. Thanks to cspanjunkie.org. And again, the first clip you heard of the arrest of 8 people in South Carolina connected to the bong hit heard around the world. One bad update that, of course, again, is the water cooler topic. And they, of course, hit it on Saturday Night Live, which, of course, hits mainline America across the board. Pot Lobby slams Kellogg's for ditching Phelps. Snap, crackle, pot? Bursting with indignation, legions of marijuana advocates are urging a boycott of Kellogg Corporation, including all of its popular munchies, for deciding to cut ties with Olympic hero Michael Phelps after he was photographed with a pot pipe. The leaders of one of the biggest legalized pot organizations, the Marijuana Policy Project, called Kellogg's actions hypocritical and disgusting and said he'd never seen his membership so angry, with more than 2,300 of them signing an online petition, with a link for you to said petition. The group urged its supporters to boycott the company's products. Kellogg's had no problem signing up Phelps when he had a conviction for drunk driving, an illegal act that could actually have killed someone, said Rob Campia, the group's executive director. To drop him for choosing to relax with a substance that's safer than beer is an outrage, and it sends a dangerous message to young people. Also urging the boycott were the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, normal.org, Students for a Sensible Drug Policy, ssdp.org/helpphelps, and the Drug Policy Alliance, drugpolicy.org. They all encourage their members to contact Kellogg's to vent their views. Now, I believe the funny Saturday Night Live thing was the weekend update, which I haven't watched. A coworker told me about it, that basically said, Kellogg's, you're going to lash out against your main fan base. Stoners love cereal. And we do. But I'm not going to have a problem not buying Kellogg's because I don't do it anyway. We, of course, hit last week, when Kellogg's dropped Phelps last Friday on episode 110, that, of course, you know, he doesn't fit with their image. Their image, of course, being connected to Monsanto and genetically engineered corn. A positive drug story. We'll see. I know it has definitely been said that perhaps some bit of addressing the draconian drug war is a way to maybe make a little bit of progress with the Obamasiah. But again, it's not him, it's us. It's you and it's me that are going to have to make the change and be the change. That's pretty much going to do it for this B-side episode of 110 of MediaMonarchy.com. One last thing, though, from Collateral News. What if pro-choice people made advertisements? They basically released a response video to the pro-life ad that was released by CatholicVote.com. That was, of course, the ad that basically, and again, I'm not going to play these clips for you because it's just music and you'd have to read the text. Collateral News does a parody of the Catholic Vote pro-life commercial that shows, you know, a young man was born poor. His father left him. His mother raised him. He went through hard times to become the 44th president of the United States, Barack Obama, the first African-American president. So, satirically, Collateral News did the response and said, what if pro-choice people made ads that basically said, he was born into privilege. His father gave him everything. His mom wore pearls. Somehow, despite being completely inept, he became the 43rd president of the United States. Oh, abortion jokes. And we're going to go from, I guess, abortions to robots from the end of this episode to the beginning of episode 111 tomorrow on the Portland Radio Authority and the Revere Radio Network, where to whet your appetite, we're going to be covering killer robots, propaganda, danger, threats, lists, scanners, chips, checkpoints, promise, camps, churches, gangs, government, eco-terror, eugenics, re-education, recalls, missing plague-infested mice, biolabs, spy sats, germs, CERN, and down the rabbit hole of the JFK assassination. That's going to be, like I said, tomorrow, Friday the 13th, episode 111, of MediaMonarchy.com. As I fight a cold and fight a mouse and fight a noisy neighbor and I have to work tomorrow at noon, you may not hear these two new episodes until late Friday evening on Friday the 13th because I'm doing the best I can. Getting bogged down and getting angry and getting frustrated and all these things is not a way to proceed. When you're angry, when you're flustered, you don't make good decisions. That's, of course, how they keep us running around in the hamster wheel, is they manipulate us with fear on all levels, whether it's planes crashing into buildings or whether your peanut butter is going to kill you. They keep you in fear, they keep you demoralized, they keep you confused, so you're not making rational, good decisions. One, because we're doing it out of fear, and two, we're doing it without all the information available. Like we just said, give us all the info, and then we could make more rational, informed decisions, whether it's about JFK or 9/11, or any of the myriad things that connect all these stories. Again, there's not one story. It's all one story. But the puzzle pieces are scattered and we're trying to put them together. And I'll keep trying to do it before it completely drives me insane and I stop doing any of this. And go maybe open a record store. I love you guys. I thank you. I appreciate it very much. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com. Like my man Webster Tarpley says, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
It's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
And that concludes our program for tonight.
This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.